Welcome to Earth Eats. I'm Annie Corrigan.
We know all the vendors by name. I've been to many of their homes, many of their farms, you know, so it's a very social environment here and a very friendly one, and that's what we strive for.
Mark Stacy manages the Linton Farmers Market. We meet vendors and customers whose lives have been changed by this small but bustling Southern Indiana market. Harvest Public Media looks at the downturn in the economy down on the farm. Is a crisis on the horizon? And mushrooms, zucchini, and tomatoes are the building blocks of Dan Williamson's recipes today. At the heart of his food, though, is his devotion to family. Mark Chilla has three international food stories from the news.
First, Annie, to Europe, where grocery chains have pulled eggs off their shelves in Germany, the Netherlands, and Belgium for fear of insecticide contamination. But where did the contamination originate? NPR reported this week that the Belgian agriculture minister placed the blame with the Netherlands. The minister told lawmakers that Dutch authorities had been aware of the contamination since last November and failed to alert others. The inspector general of the Dutch food watchdog NVWA quickly disputed that claim, saying officials knew nothing about insecticides in eggs in November 2016. While officials try to track down the culprit, food safety agencies in the UK, France, Switzerland, and Sweden are also on alert for contaminated eggs. In Canada, a company that developed the first genetically modified salmon, a product still not approved for sale in the U.S., has announced 4.5 tons of salmon fillets have already been sold in Canada. U.S. biotech firm Aqua Bounty spliced a growth hormone gene from a Chinook salmon into an Atlantic salmon and turned it up to overdrive. The so-called Aqua Advantage fish, which opponents pejoratively call frankenfish, grow up to 6 times faster than their wild peers and reach market weight in half the time. The U.S. Food and Drug Administration cleared transgenic salmon for sale in the fall of 2015, but it still has to get through labeling and other regulatory hurdles before it reaches shelves in the U.S. Advocacy groups have pressured major U.S. grocers to spurn the fast-growing salmon publicly. Groups including the Food and Water Watch, the Center for Food Safety, and the Consumers Union have warned that the product could pose yet unseen health risks and environmental damage if it escaped from fish farms into the wild. And finally, Finnish researchers have used small amounts of electricity to zap water, carbon dioxide, and microbes to create a crude but nutritious protein powder. The Food from Electricity study is part of a wider project to develop an energy system that is completely renewable and emission-free. In a press release, the researchers said they hope to develop a process over the next decade that is 10 times more energy efficient than current methods for growing food. The electrolysis-generated powder is about 50% protein and 25% carbohydrates. Researchers said the process could help to stem a growing global food crisis. The United Nations Food and Agriculture Organization estimates that about 1 in 9 people around the world suffer from malnourishment. Taylor Killo and Chad Bouchard work on the blog side of eartheats.org. Go and check out their work over there.
Thanks, Mark.
You bet.
It's troubling times right now for Midwest farmers. Farm income is down for the 4th straight year. Prices for the most important crops are down. Some are comparing it to the 1980s farm crisis, one of the worst farm depressions in U.S. history. We asked Harvest Public Media's Peggy Lowe to look into the economics. She found out that the term crisis depends on who you ask.
Of all the expensive machinery Tom Giesel works on his central Kansas farm, his favorite sits in his home office. That's a microfilm machine, like the ones you used at your high school library. Giesel is a 64-year-old farmer who also happens to be the historian of the National Farmers Union.
Best investment ever made.
Today's history lesson, the 1980s farm crisis, when declining prices and land values sucked farmers into a vicious cycle of bankruptcies.
I remember in the early 80s what happened and how it happened. And I went back, I've done some research and tried to do some parallels and comparisons.
Today, Giesel worries that history is repeating itself. Farmers face tight margins and often are in debt. Farm income has steadily dropped since 2013 because of a global grain glut.
There are still piles of grain from last year on the ground, and we're harvesting this year's crop. So what does that tell you about oversupply?
Fearing the worst, the National Farmers Union in May set up a farm crisis webpage with information about loans, mediation with creditors, disaster relief, and a suicide prevention hotline.
We're running on empty. The farm crisis is real.
Crisis is a very personal concept. Okay, what's a condition for someone else might be a crisis for me.
Bill Watson is president of the agribusiness division of UMB Bank, a top 20 farm lender based in Kansas City.
A lot of people say, is this the same kind of thing that we were in the 80s? Okay, and my answer to that is clearly no.
Watson says there's a couple big differences. Farmers carried a lot of debt in the 80s, and interest rates were very high, upwards of 20%. Yet he agrees that farm income is a problem. The USDA says it was cut in half in the last 4 years. Beyond losing money each year, Watson says that for farmers, all that matters is
whether you fail making a payment on your equipment, a payment on your land, a payment to your landlord. That's when things really start to change for you. And so I would submit to you, that's the definition of a crisis.
Our take is that we are in an adjustment period in agriculture.
I talked to David Widmar via Skype. He's an ag economist at Purdue University in Indiana who prefers the term adjustment to describe the recent downturn in the ag economy. He points out that farm income is down from a high point in 2013. Another big difference between today and the 80s? Back then, exports had dried up thanks to the Soviet Union embargo.
So agricultural exports, I wouldn't say collapsed, but severely pulled back. And we haven't seen at this point a significant drop or a pullback in demand to those 1980 levels.
No pullback, perhaps. And overseas sales today are steady. But some worry that President Trump's undoing the Trans-Pacific Partnership and his strong talk about renegotiating NAFTA will change that.
And here's some more of my fields. The field I farm up there on the hill made a little over 100 bushel an acre.
Tom Giesel and I moved to his other office, his pickup, where we drove out to see some of the 1,800 acres he planted in wheat. It was newly harvested that week, its shiny golden stubble sticking up from the ground. Giesel is the fourth generation of his family to farm here in central Kansas. He's 64 years old, and because of the bad times, he sometimes wonders if he should retire early.
But I think people my age are saying, okay, they say there's another 2 or 3 years before this turns around. Well, I'm losing money. So that means if it goes 2 years this way, then I have to work another 4 or 5 years to get back where I'm at today. So why carry on?
Congress is working on the next farm bill, which pumps money into a safety net. Farm advocates say this is not the time to cut that funding. Peggy Lowe, Harvest Public Media.
Get more stories like this one at harvestpublicmedia.org. Our recipe today is wrapped up in a story about fatherhood. Dan Williamson always knew that there was a time limit on his career as a chef. 15 hours a day on your feet in a hot kitchen gets harder and harder as you age. When he was young, though, he cooked because he had to.
I grew up in a house with five sisters and just one mother raising us all in the 70s. So money was always an issue in our family, and because mom often had two and sometimes three jobs, there were many times when the kids sort of took over the kitchen and were in charge of getting dinner ready and that sort of thing. So what I started doing early was experimenting in my mom's kitchen. I was second to the oldest, so there was a lot of sort of caregiving being passed around in our family. But it really helped us to be close, and we still are.
Growing up in southern Ohio, he worked in kitchens to make some extra money. He furthered his career in Cincinnati and France. Now, 14 years after he left professional kitchens, he's passing on his love of cooking to his 11-year-old daughter, Kate. I visited them one afternoon as they were cooking up some stuffed mushrooms with tomato coulis and a side of zucchini hash. Dan starts by the stove. Kate is shredding some zucchini.
All right, you ready?
Yep.
Okay, so we're going to start off with the sauce. So we'll need to cut up some shallots and some garlic. And we'll get those started in some olive oil. We'll sweat those a little bit. We'll add maybe a little wine. Should we put wine in there?
Sure.
How often do you two cook together?
Actually pretty often. When he cooks, I'm typically there sometimes.
So we try, my kids are of an age where we run a lot on the weekends. So we try to cook as much as we can whenever we're home. Okay, so I'm going to cut these. How about you? So Kate got her first chef knife for her birthday this year. So why don't you cut the ends off these and then start shredding them so we can cook those off as well while I chop the mushrooms, okay?
When did you realize that she was into cooking?
Right away. One of her favorite movies was
The Princess and the
Frog. And of course, you know, it's set on the bayou and there was gumbo. And she also knew the story of me sort of winning my job in France by cooking Cajun food. And it's always been one of my favorites. So she just was kind of drawn to that.
And I only started watching it when I was a few years old. So at first it was just this really awesome movie before I started really like getting, oh, that looks good. I realized it was gumbo and asked out if we could make it.
Mmm, gumbo smells good, Tiana.
I think it's going, Daddy.
Yeah, are you sure?
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely positive.
Yes.
Mmm.
What?
Well, sweetheart, this is the best gumbo I've ever tasted. Come here. Your door, I look, girl, got a gift.
All right. So we're looking for what happens to onions when they're cooked? They kind of become...
They become clear.
Yeah.
Like Caesar.
So we're just going to add a little wine. All right, so in go the tomatoes. When I first moved to Bloomington, my girlfriend at the time had moved here a little bit earlier than me because I had to stay behind to finish up a job as a sous chef of the Hyde Park Country Club in Cincinnati. And so we decided to have a party when I first got here so that I could meet all her new colleagues at work or at school and so forth, and then invite all of my friends that I knew as well. And so I cooked for a week, and we just put out a huge spread of just Cajun everything. And we invited everybody to come and bring musical instruments and wine and so forth, and we just had a party. Well, one of her professors at the last minute sort of called and said, "Can't make it, I'm entertaining some archaeologists from the University of Pennsylvania." We said, well, does he play guitar? And of course the answer was yes. And he came, we had fun and he ate lots of food. At the end of the night, he kind of came to me and said, "I would love for you to cook for me in the south of France. We do a dig there every summer, so it's all summer long, and we would be looking for somebody that could do this kind of thing." And so I said, "Sure." And I thought, well, he'll forget about it, or, you know. And a couple weeks later, I got an email from him, and he had it all laid out, and the dates, and what he could pay me, and that sort of thing. And so I went. So we had so much fun, and it went so well that they started inviting me back. And I ended up spending 7 summers there with them. And it allowed me to do things I had never imagined that, you know, a poor boy growing up in southern Ohio would be able to do, like learn a second language. But I knew all along that it was kind of a young man's career. And eventually, like everything, I had to sort of walk away from it because, you know, the kids were coming along and that sort of thing. And that's one of the things I didn't want to be, was absent from their lives, especially growing up. So I chose to give it up and find another career. Our stuffing's cooled a little bit. So we're gonna add probably about a half a cup of breadcrumbs. So then we're gonna add some sort of copious amounts of grated Parmesan. Now all that's left is stuffing the mushrooms and getting them in the oven. So Kate, if you wanna help me with these, we'll just...
taking a bit, stuffing them in, and then...
So what I love about cooking is the sharing part, you know? When I see my family happy, you know, while we sit around the table and talk about our day and eat a good meal. And so, yeah, I still have a deep love for it, and in some ways a bit of a yearning, but I would never turn back, because the moments that it's allowed me to have with my children, who I was thinking the other day that my daughter's only 8 years, 7 years away from being out of the house and in college. So it's all gone by really so quickly that I'm just very thankful that I've been afforded the opportunity to be there and see all this.
Oh, Mom's home.
Oh, Mom's home, yeah. So you're just in time to try the mushrooms, babe.
Great. We're cooking zucchini hash and stuffed mushrooms with tomato sauce.
Cool. Why? What is in it?
So the mushrooms are stuffed with mushrooms and cheese, which is your favorite.
Yay! Favorite food is cheese of all time.
So probably what you'll do is...
Jack is 9 years old. Nikki Williamson also joined us in the kitchen after getting home from work that day.
All right, bon appetit.
He's going for the mushroom.
Is he? That's surprising.
That's good.
Former chef Dan Williamson works these days as the president of Bill Resch Insurance. His daughter and sous chef is Kate. Their recipes are at eartheats.org. Coming up at the Linton Farmers Market.
When I see people coming here and grabbing a cup of coffee and a cinnamon roll and sitting down and talking to their friends, meeting friends here, you know, that's what it's all about. It's all about the fabric of the community. So that's what I love to see.
It's also about improving access to healthy food and creating a space where farmers can make money. Market manager Mark Stacey talks about the many moving parts at his community's farmers market. Production support for Earth Eats comes from Charles Schwab & Company Incorporated, with a local branch on Morton Street in Bloomington. Independent branch leader Jeremy Zeichner, CFP, offers personalized financial plans matched to investors' goals. More at schwab.com/Bloomington. Elizabeth Rue, enrolled agent and owner of Personal Financial Services, providing tax preparation for individuals and businesses, located on the Beeline Trail. More information at personalfinancialservices.net. And Need More Coffee Roasters, a woman-owned coffee bar and roastery dedicated to roasting organic, direct trade, and fair trade coffee from small-scale farmers around the world. On the east side of Bloomington, corner of Pete Ellis and Longview, needmoreroasters.com.
So we've been open a little over an hour, and we've had three customers come in with their SNAP cards, and how many, about five or six, come in to get their vouchers?
You'll remember Mallory Rickbile from last week's episode. As a community wellness coordinator for Greene County, Indiana, she helped grow the Market Bucks program at the Linton Farmers Market.
Last year, we would have never dreamed that we had had, you know, this much participation in one market.
It was the conversation she had with Lee Bush that convinced me that I just had to visit this market in Linton. It's in Humphreys Park, right off the main drag. You can't miss it as you drive by. Cars are parked every which way, and it was a very sunny Saturday when I stopped by, so the white tents were gleaming. In its fifth year, the number of vendors has more than tripled. I met customers who've been shopping here since the beginning, and some who stopped by that morning for the very first time. We heard from Mallory that participation in the Market Bucks program is growing. That's where SNAP users cash in up to $10 of their money to receive a dollar-for-dollar match for buying vegetables. The market also partners with the Women, Infants, and Children's Special Supplemental Nutrition Program to give participants three $8 vouchers throughout the market season. Take a side step over to Mallory's table, and she doubles that money through the Market Bucks program.
And that's exactly what Kelly Dimbath did.
Today is actually my first day at the farmer's market. So I am super excited that we have a cart full of food.
For one $8 voucher, she bought 12 ears of sweet corn and 4 squash. She says thanks to the WIC and Market Bucks programs, she spends her money here and not at Walmart.
We try and eat as healthy as we can, but it's sad because sometimes at the grocery store, the healthier things are the more expensive items. But we came here and stocked up, so we're going to have some fresh corn and squash tonight for dinner.
You're going to have corn for a week.
Yes. Yes, I'll probably freeze some of it.
Hi, I have tomatoes and kale. Good.
Jill Flascom has been shopping in the market all 5 years.
Oh, $5. I know, right? Jeez, it's rarely seems to go into the double digits, no matter how much produce you get.
With her bag slung over her shoulder, she gives each booth a good long look.
I live in downtown Linton, so it's literally a mile away. I could actually walk, but I don't really like to carry so much heavy stuff back. When you move to a small town like this to have community things to do like this, especially food-based, which I'm interested in, so.
Hi, my name's Tom Fisher. That's my daughter, Lori. She kind of looks after me. My wife passed away last November, and so, yes, and we're just having we do real well.
I'm getting some green beans.
What are you going to do with these?
I will probably just lightly cook them and with some onion and some green or some new potatoes. Yeah.
Green onions. So she got some green beans.
Oh, that's good. They're very good too. Yep.
You like green beans?
Oh yeah, everybody likes green beans, guys. this particular booth is the Rossenberger farmer from down in Odin, Indiana. Yes, it's a whole grocery right here for vegetables.
How long have you been shopping here?
Every year.
All 5 years?
All the years, yeah. Well, however many there are. Got my original bag and everything.
What has this added to your life, personally?
Well, some quality, I think. It's just that we look forward to it, number one. You know, something good to do. And being retired and pretty handicapped, we just kind of enjoy being here, you know?
Oh, she's looking at tomatoes now.
Dad, do you want me to get you some tomatoes?
Yes, ma'am. Just good old Indiana tomatoes. Don't eat any all year until now, and then I just eat them probably every meal if I get a chance.
I'm going to be on the radio, guys.
Market manager Mark Stacy walks a slow circle around the market, smiling and saying his good mornings. He says making the Linton Farmers Market accessible to everyone in the community was vital to helping it grow.
You know, it's not just a situation where we're trying to get customers, but we're also wanting to maintain our vendors. You know, they're here to make money, and we want to do everything we can to provide a venue for which they can do that and have a good day every time they come to the market.
There are 17 vendors today. Stacy has volunteered as the market manager since the beginning. It's been his job to find the farmers and producers to populate the market.
And our first year, you know, that's all we were doing is trying to get more vendors because we started out so small. We were averaging only 5 vendors per market back then. Now, this year, it's kind of ironic. I can't believe it's happened already, but we have pretty much reached our capacity for vendors, and I'm actually even turning vendors down already and putting them on a waiting list.
He points to the Providence Farm table. Farmer Jake Foster is so tall you have to duck under the lip of the tent to see his face. Abigail Foster is sitting in a camping chair. They're both 21 years old.
Hi, guys.
Did you hear that we were talking about you?
Yeah.
You saw us pointing, right?
I think Mark's fascinated.
Yes. Yes, I am. Absolutely.
And Abigail is 9 months pregnant.
How are you feeling?
I feel good, yeah.
You're due tomorrow?
Yes, yeah. I know, that's the face everyone makes. But yeah, I feel good. I mean, I'm very thankful to have been healthy this whole pregnancy and actually enjoy it. But we're excited.
They sell eggs, chicken, and grass-fed beef.
they converted a conventional corn field into pasture for their cattle and chickens. This year, it felt right to start getting the word out about their farm, and this market seemed like the perfect venue.
We went and visited my dad's family up in northern Indiana in Mishawaka, and I picked my dad up in Soulsbury where he was working, and on the way home from Soulsbury, it was on a Saturday, and we drove past this market, and we thought, that's a pretty happening place. So we pulled in here and talked to Mark and Joanne, and that's how it started.
Abigail was back at the market the next Saturday, still pregnant. And the very next day, she gave birth to Matthew Scott Foster. All three of the Fosters were at the Providence Farm table last weekend.
Hello.
Hi. Is that blueberry on top?
No, that is Earl Grey tea and lavender. The cake itself is tea, and then it's got lavender buttercream on it.
What's that one?
Mint chocolate chip.
I think we'll get the chocolate chip.
Okay.
Across the way at Humphreys Park is the booth with the longest line, Jody Sexton's Bundt in the Oven.
It's $3. Thank you. Well, I have mini Bundt cakes. I started off with 6 different flavor varieties. Now I'm down to 2. One flavor I have, lemon blueberry, usually as soon as I put it out, there's like hawks waiting to come get it. And if I don't bring it, I get in trouble, so.
I'm Rhonda.
We've talked.
Ta-da, I've made it.
You're here. You're a real person.
2 lavender.
Okay. $6, please.
Have you had these before?
Nope. My first time. Follow her on Facebook.
So you came specifically for these?
Yeah.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Sexton has always loved to bake. When she discovered mini Bundt tins, she took her hobby to the next level.
So I came here at the farmer's market last year just to try it out, to see how it would go. Loved it. I loved being here. And then everybody loved the cakes. So actually, in August, I'm going to be opening up a little shop here in Linton. And I've been a nurse for 15 years, so this is a huge change for me. But I'm ready to take the leap and see how it goes.
She says things are on track at her brick-and-mortar store. She's hoping to open at the end of the month. She'll hire someone to work the store Saturdays so she can continue selling at the market. She says this is where her roots are, and she doesn't want to give that up. So what's it going to take for you to quit your day job and become a full-time food professional?
Yeah, that's something I wouldn't mind doing. I have to find a paying job, though, to do that. That's the only problem. You can't pay the bills on a volunteer basis. So that's what it's going to take, I guess.
The Linton Farmers Market. What a special place. Big thanks to Mark Stacy for showing me around and introducing me to so many interesting people. I took pictures along the way, and those are at eartheats.org. Production support for Earth Eats comes from Elizabeth Rue, enrolled agent and owner of Personal Financial Services, providing tax preparation for individuals and businesses located on the Beeline Trail. More information at personalfinancialservices.net. Need more coffee roasters? A woman-owned coffee bar and roastery dedicated to roasting organic, direct trade, and fair trade coffee from small-scale farmers around the world. On the east side of Bloomington, corner of Pete Ellis and Longview. NeedMoreRoasters.com. And Charles Schwab & Company Incorporated, with a local branch on Morton Street in Bloomington. Independent branch leader Jeremy Zeichner, CFP, offers personalized financial plans matched to investors' goals. More at Schwab.com/Bloomington. What a good day. Thanks for sharing it with us. I'm Annie Corrigan.